Well, greetings once again to all of Turdville as we approach the Ides of March. I thought it would be fun to have Caesaris Jackassus in with us for another visit. This is my friend Jim Willey, the editor and publisher of the Hat Trick Letter, which many of you are subscribers, and if you're not, why not? And this is your chance to get a nice, healthy dose of Jackass to set you straight with everything that's going on in the world. So, Jim, my friend, how are you? And welcome back to Turdville.
Oh, I'm doing okay, hanging in there. Always feeling a little strange during this unease globally and nationally. We got a lot of events going on that are forcing the situation, Turd. And, you know, we just will not have a stable situation in 2014. I knew it was going to be a tough year. I knew it was going to be a year of disruptions and change. And it looks like we're well on that course.
Didn't it feel that way? I remember just kind of having that exact same feeling in my stomach as when the calendar flipped, you know. And I've mentioned on many occasions, and I think most people feel this way, that we've all been surprised, you know, because you thought after the debacle and that everything was dead after 2008, that, oh boy, 2009 is going to be the year. Well, it wasn't 2009, but boy, certainly 2010, it's all going to come apart at the seams. We've all been surprised that they've been able to, you know, hold it together, you know, with the proverbial baling, you know, wire and chewing gum and all that stuff. But as we approached 14, and as you look back at all the events of 13 with the coordinated scheme to drive metals prices lower, but all the metal flowing to China and the clear manipulation of almost, of every single market by the central banks of the world, you just felt like we're getting close to the end. And so now here we are, the big news, I guess, the biggest, most important event currently is what's going on in Russia and Crimea. We had, they call it a revolution, but you could sure see the hand of the U.S. and the EU behind it. And now here we are, Jim. How do you see this playing out in the near term and then beyond?
Well, to begin with, you know, kind of as preface, as we approach 2014, you know, Christmas season, year's holiday, and all that, there were a lot of signals that this is not going to be a normal year. We had a change of guard, Bernanke out, Yellen in. No change in the QE to infinity. And it looked to me like the change would be that they're going to get caught in their lies with significant bond monetization volume. Then you had Deutsche Bank, and it is breaking apart. I'm told by The Voice that it's going to be broken into something like five different entities, including one of them being Bankers Trust, the derivative shop. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
But we also had J.P. Morgan, their headquarters sale at a distressed price, a lot of events having to do with draining the inventory at J.P. Morgan and the COMEX, which is maybe, you know, the same thing. But I just knew that this is not going to be a normal year. We had talk about a global reset for currencies, which is basically return to the gold standard. A lot of nonsense for the people who got conned and fleeced into the Iraqi dinar. I feel sorry for them that they've got a Bush-like 80 IQ for falling into that trap. Simple rule of thumb, Turd. If J.P. Morgan is in the room, like they are with the Iraqi dinar, there's nothing for you.
Good point.
Don't worry about it. It's all gone. But, gosh, when the Olympics took place, it looked to me like, oh, gee, they're pushing Ukraine while Putin is not distracted by the Olympics in Sochi. Putin was running the big, you know, not the press box, what do you call it, the elite box, the one where President Xi Jinping or whatever his name, Jinping or the new, I can't pronounce their names. They're difficult. I'm just going to call him President Xi.
The Chinese premier. How's that?
Yeah, the Chinese premier. He's a big guy. I mean, he looks like he's about 6'4", 6'3", towered over Putin. But it looked like Ukraine was being pushed while Putin was preoccupied. And, you know, I read, oh, gee, they're calling it a revolution. Yeah, right, right. I mean, this is just one more popular revolution pushed by Langley. It's the same signature every single time.
Every time. And you know, Jim, the like you mentioned, it was on kind of standby during the Olympics. And I sat here and thought, well, they'll sit there and they'll do these protests in the square and we'll have the little camera going so everybody can see it until the Olympics are over. And then the Ukrainian forces backed by the Russians will squash that. And instead, it was like the opposition folks could see that as well and said, well, we better force this issue before the Olympics are over. And so they did. And now we've got, you know, this situation. But you're right, whether it was Victoria Nuland, that lady that was caught on tape, or God, we got this news about the story about the snipers that were killing cops and protesters, right? And how they were not necessarily linked to the Ukrainian government. I mean, it's pretty clear the hand of the West or the hand of Langley was on that one the whole way.
I believe the snipers and the party that stole the central bank 33 tons of gold, I think the same party was Blackwater.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that would make sense.
They're the mercenary for hire who will kill, rape, steal, do anything you need. But, you know, you got to sign on the line and pay for the services rendered.
Yeah.
Now, this is a gigantic betrayal in progress. Here's what I think is going on, and this is not entirely my own thinking. I got a group of very smart people who bounce ideas back and forth. We kind of call it our little inner circle, but that's not meant to be snotty or haughty in any way. But the voice provides an opinion once in a while. He's a very busy man, and we got some other people who chew over stuff. And here's what it looks like is happening with Ukraine. From a big picture standpoint, Putin saw that he was not going to stop this, so he didn't. Mm-hmm. He grabbed onto what he considered to be the most important piece, which was the Crimean Peninsula, the Sevastopol, naval port facility for his Black Sea Fleet.
Yes.
And if the United States ever believes that they could lock that down, that'd be about as stupid as the Russians thinking they could lock down the Chesapeake in Virginia near Norfolk. Mm-hmm. You don't do that. You can't do that. It's the only warm water port. So Putin grabbed onto the Crimean and the naval port, made sure that that was secured, got parliamentary approval in Russia, the Duma. Might have been a railroad, but whatever. They're going through their legal process. And now there's going to be a vote on, I believe it's Sunday, the 16th, where the Crimean citizens will have a popular referendum. So if they vote, you know, overwhelmingly in favor, I don't want to throw percentages out, but I don't expect it's going to be, you know, 55%. I think it's going to be probably closer to 80 to 90% voting to join the Russian Union Federation. Okay, now back to the big picture again. Putin took what he considered to be important. He let the Americans and the Europeans, with their coordination with oligarchs, the Ukrainian oligarchs, and you know, anyone who doesn't follow the oligarch story is missing the major pieces to what's going on. Some of the oligarchs in Ukraine are enemies of Putin. They found a place to hide in Kiev,
right,
years ago. And maybe some of them are a little bit friendly, but I really doubt it. I mean, just because they speak Russian and have Russian descent doesn't mean that they're pro-Russia. It means they're pro themselves. So you had all these oligarchs, and they're very much involved with the Svoboda. I didn't know Svoboda. I knew Svoboda was a New York Met outfielder back in the 60s. But Svoboda means freedom. Freedom. And I think it's in Russian. I don't think it's in the Ukrainian language. There's a separate Ukrainian language. It's an Eastern Slavic language. It is not Russian. It shares the Cyrillic alphabet and might have some accents or little distinguishing differences. So back to the big picture. Putin said, go ahead, West, U.S. and Europe. Go ahead, you Western boys. Take the other half of Ukraine. Do whatever you do. Because here's what he expects to happen. The U.S. and the Europeans and the big corporations will rape and will pillage everything in Western Ukraine and the surrounding areas like in Romania, Bulgaria, and Poland. And the entire world, especially the Eastern European nations, are watching. They're watching very closely. They're probably very aware of the snipers on the roof hired by the pro-Maidan fascists. They're very aware that the takeover was of the fascists, the Nazis, who openly showed their swastikas. They're probably very aware of the stolen 33 tons of gold. They're probably very aware of the $70 billion of oligarch money that went to Switzerland, which essentially drains a lot of the capital, the working capital, in Kiev.
Right.
They're probably very aware of the oil companies, the energy companies, especially where they're drilling, because there's a lot of protest movement in Bulgaria and parts of Ukraine against the fracking, because they know that it's environmentally destructive, and they know it perhaps better than the Americans do, because Americans just don't seem to catch on to what's going on. Fracking destroys the groundwater. So the climax of the Putin strategy is the Eastern European nations are going to observe the rape and the pillage of Ukraine on the Western side and its neighbors, and they will flock. They will flock. They will run into the hands of the Russians and Chinese to join the Eurasian trade zone. This is a birth event. It's kind of like Ukraine is attempting a childbirth. It's going to be stillborn. And in the aftermath will rise the Eurasian trade zone. It could not gather enough Eastern European momentum without recognition of the rape and the pillage of Ukraine. And that's coming, and it's already starting. The next big step will be the austerity plan in order to secure the $15 or $18 billion of European Union aid. In order to do that, they've got to have a poison pill, an austerity plan. It didn't work in Spain. It didn't work anywhere in the pigs nations of Europe. It didn't work in Greece. It's not working in Cyprus, if they've adopted it more than I'm aware. So the austerity plan is going to be put in place. Why? Because it'll help in the rape and the pillage of the Ukraine.
Hey, Jim, let me see if I want to jump in, because I want to see if I can connect a few of these things, because I've been, as you've been talking, I'm seeing kind of something emerge. And it's a multifaceted thing. And so it's always a challenge in my ADHD brain to keep track of multifaceted things, but I'm going to give it a try. You mentioned the oligarchs taking their money out of the, you know, that's one of this sanction plans that the EU and the US have. We're going to sanction, freeze the assets of some of these Russian oligarchs or Ukrainian oligarchs or whatever. You mentioned that money. I saw some stories about that just this week, that money flowing out of there. Now there are stories today about capital controls and bail-ins and all that jazz, because so much money has left the Ukraine. And those two things are related, yes?
Well, yeah. What they've done is they've removed so much money that the whole financial structure in Kiev at the center is going to collapse. So they're putting in their capital control. It's going to collapse.
Okay, so you can see that coming. And you can see that, there's these references that Obama plays checkers while Putin and, you know, the Chinese, the Iranians are all playing chess. Okay, so there's one. So then the second part, they think, okay, well, now we're really going to hurt Putin because Gazprom delivers all this gas through Ukraine. And so we being the EU, NATO, U.S., are going to secure Western Ukraine. And we're going to go in there with our Halliburton technology and frack the hell out of the place and come up with our own gas for Western Europe and cut Russia out of the deal. Kind of the idea there?
Well, yeah, except it's such a stupid plan.
Exactly it is. Exactly it is. But that, can't you see that that's kind of one of, maybe that's what they're thinking, you know, as Obama's playing his checkers game? And all they're doing is, like what you said, they're sending the rest of Eastern Europe who's observing all this directly into Putin's arms without him ever having to fire a shot.
Yeah, well, look at what happened in the United States. I mean, in my own old ex-home area, I mean, I moved out of the Pittsburgh and Western Pennsylvania area. I went to graduate school at Carnegie Mellon there, but I spent 22 years in the Boston area, 21 years there. So, you know, there's a lot of fracking going on in Western Pennsylvania, and Marcellus is the company. Well, it only took about 18 months or 20 months, and it's done. They're done. Marcellus is pulling out of Western Pennsylvania. They've done all they're going to do in the big extraction of shale gas and fracking supply of gas. So what on earth were they thinking? This is not a long-term strategy. It's barely a short-term strategy. But, you know, if people are wondering what is going on with all this fracking, it's simple. It started with the Gulf of Mexico. Halliburton sabotaged a well that was determined to be very close to a volcanic port. So they exploded the well and released the volcano into the Gulf of Mexico. All those recurring cycle scenes that you saw in 2010 and 11, that was not a leaking well. It was the orange plume underwater, under pressure, with plenty of sulfuric junk from a volcano. All right, then came the ban of the Gulf of Mexico, and who's the beneficiary of the ban of Gulf of Mexico offshore drilling? Halliburton, because they gobbled up a bunch of onshore, land-based contracts, and no investigation of insider movements to gobble up a monopoly sort of majority of land-based drilling contracts by Halliburton. Suddenly, they're worth a lot more money after the Gulf of Mexico is shut down. And it happens that Halliburton has a monopoly on fracking chemicals.
How about that?
Now they're taking advantage of the fracking chemical monopoly in Europe. But here, what's the drawback of all this fracking? They're fracturing the table, the water table. They're punching holes in the water table. And now in thousands of instances in North America, especially the United States, the farmers are really angry because they can light their water pools on fire. This is not progress. So, you know, gosh, I'd like to get to the threats if we could.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and let me ask you one more question about this then. I've vacillated on this in the last week or so. In that, is he completely clueless and naive and underqualified and all that stuff, which I believe he is, or is he aware of what his weaknesses are? And what I mean by that is, or what the U.S.'s weaknesses are, because what no one, the mainstream media and the analysts and the pundits and the senators and all these people don't seem to understand is that the U.S. does not hold any cards here. If they threaten serious sanctions in any way, then they're just going to speed up the demise of the dollar and the imposition or the beginnings of this new Eurasian trade zone you're talking about. So Obama's not really doing anything. I mean, he's kind of fiddling and, you know, trying to bluster and posture and all this kind of stuff, but not really making too much noise. And I don't know if it's just because he's weak and clueless or if he actually understands that he has, you know, a handful of threes and twos and fives and stuff like that. He has no cards. Do you have an opinion on that? I mean, I think you're probably with me on this one, but do you have an opinion on the recognition about how screwed we are in the West, or are they just going forward, you know, thinking that tomorrow is just going to be like yesterday?
Well, I'm basically in parallel with you, but I differ in a significant way. I don't regard our leader to be Obama. I don't regard that the orders come from the White House.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
I don't regard that the people in charge are in the executive branch of the U.S. government.
Yeah, that's true. That's a weakness of what I said. You're right.
I don't pay much of any attention to what Obama does, says, has speeches for, decisions on. I don't think he even signs his own executive decrees. I think they're made largely by the bankers and security agency. Here's the order that I believe of who is in charge and who's making decisions. This is our first Langley president. This is the security agencies. They're in charge. The other ones in charge are the heroin merchants, because you don't profit from the global monopoly based in our Afghanistan vertically integrated operations for heroin production. You don't profit over $800 billion a year without being able to throw a lot of money around to win votes, to buy senators, to win the hearts and minds of the committees in the Congress. That's a lot of money. It's so much money. 800 billion, not million, B as in boy, billion. And it's one of the huge, huge stories. I'm told that when the bankers are trying to make their revelations and do whistleblowing, there's one area they cannot bring out details or they'll be murdered immediately. And that's the money laundering for the heroin, which supports the Wall Street banks, which I believe is the next most important element, making decisions. Mm-hmm. The fourth most is the oil companies. And if you don't notice the oil company presence in Ukraine, you're missing a very big picture here.
Absolutely.
It's Royal Dutch Shell, it's Chevron, it's Exxon, and it's Eni out of Italy. There's a small player in there, it's Cossack, but I looked up market capitalization of Cossack versus the other. The others are somewhere between 500 and 1,000 times larger. Cossack is a little Eastern European developer, and they do drilling and various things. But, you know, I don't think that there's a whole lot of long-term strategy when it comes to Ukraine and the actions there. I had a good, you know, a smart buddy asked me the other day, Jim, it doesn't look like they're thinking much. Why are they doing some of these things? Why are they making such decisions? Why are they following through on such disastrous paths? And I said to him, have you ever known anybody who was just totally desperate and had no options? They don't think clearly. They react.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't even so much as react. They say to themselves, well, I've got to do this because I've got to defend that wall. And I know it's not defensible, but I got to be there. So this is a last defense because call it Obama. I don't really care. I call it the Western forces, the narcos, the oil companies, and the bankers. There's a lot of bank debt. There's $23 billion in Western bank debt. It's all going to default just like Greece. This is Greece Redux. Okay, they're not thinking deep into the future. They're trying to block a vital cog. It's not an axis. It's a big gear on the Eurasian trade zone. We've all known for years, pardon me, the importance of Ukraine for natural gas pipelines. They've been in the news in 05 and 07. They cut off, Russian Gazprom cut off Ukraine for not paying properly. Very few people understand that for years and years, Ukraine was getting a ridiculous discount of something like $50 per 1,000 cubic feet as opposed to the normal 200. So they're getting a 75 to 80% discount on price. Well, when Russia cut that off and said, no, you got to pay a regular price, Ukraine said, no, we don't want to pay it. So Russia cut them off, which also reduced, as they say, reduced significantly the gas pressure. I love that in Italy. But you got to look at things like Germany gets 36% of its gas from Russia. Now, to be sure, they get a lot from LNG, liquefied natural gas, coming through the North Sea and I think there's a Baltic route, the Baltic Sea route, but there's a lot of undersea LNG piping already that's online, and Germany is the main beneficiary. But Italy gets 27% of its gas from Russia. France gets, I think it's 23% of its gas from Russia. So, you know, you're going to see some threats. And Russia's already painted the wall. They put the writing on the wall very clearly. They said, due to economic conditions and political risk, they may have to reduce the gas flow through the Ukrainian pipelines that go, including to Western Europe. What kind of economic risk are they talking about? Well, perhaps that the customers won't be able to pay for their gas.
I'd say that's the main one.
That's a big one. But it could be that they're saying economic risk when what they really mean is you're messing with our ruble currency exchange rate and we don't like it. So we're just going to react this way and call it economic risk, because our economic risk is the price inflation that comes about from the falling ruble exchange rate, which you guys are doing in London and New York. Oh, man, U.S. is not planning as much as they are reacting to the growing formation of the Eurasian trade zone. Ukraine is going to be a vital cog to it. It's going to be a gear. The axis of this is going to be three countries, and two are in place. China, Russia, and Germany is coming. When the Eastern European nations observe, I keep saying it, the rape and the pillage of Ukraine and its neighboring states, you're going to see Germany flip. Germany's not of one mind. You've got the Deutsche Bank bankers and the EU commissioners and the elite there that are very loyal to London and New York. But there's another side of Germany. It's not the Eastern Germans. No, it's the business side of Germany. The business side that have built, that have cooperated to construct and to make available the other pipelines from Russia, the LNG pipelines to Germany, and the heavy rail facilities. They're numerous. They go from Russia to Germany. They end in Germany, right? Because that's the big industrial powerhouse. They were not freaking morons to give their industry to China like the United States did. One of the biggest betrayals in U.S. history. The Germans didn't do that. Instead, 15 years ago, the Germans had these national conferences, these big, big meetings with the labor unions. And instead, they said, look, you drop by 15% your demands and some of the reductions, some reductions in your fringe benefits, and we will guarantee that we will not relocate in China, and we will guarantee that the businesses will continue in Germany. And that's why they still have surpluses. That's why their economy is still strong. That's exactly why the United States is not strong. They gave up their industry. And the U.S. had other things. The U.S. had perhaps more powerful labor unions and a more diverse and ingrained environmental movement. We got to get to the big, big threat.
Well, let's go there, Jim. I think what I'm going to end up doing with this podcast is dividing it into two parts for everybody to listen to. So I'm going to call that part one.